Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Just got done watching that Celtics-Cavs game 2. Boy, that is going to be a tough series for LeBron James to win. As good as he is, his supporting cast just letting him down. And really, who does he really have around him, right? You know, he has Kevin Love, and really, in the series, the best two players are LeBron James and Kevin Love. But I think, you know, if you're rating the top 10 players in that series, 3 through 10 are all in the Boston Celtics. That is a young, scrappy, good team with players with a lot of energy. LeBron James can't win that series by himself. He's going to have a tough time winning a game by himself, as it showed yesterday when he lost, even though he scored 40. Tough game. And, you know, Cleveland fans, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're a Cleveland fan and you're a Browns fan, I would say start getting ready for football season, because it seems like the Cavs are going to end up losing that series, and probably LeBron James then leaves, and the Cavs are left with terrible contracts for George Hill and Tristan Thompson, and a complete overhaul they're going to need to do again after just overhauling the team midseason. I think the Browns have a decent shot this year of, you know, shocking the world and winning 6-7 games. And ultimately, I think they do have a brighter future now that they have Baker Mayfield. They have acquired some quality talent in the draft the last couple years. They may put it together. All hope is not lost in Cleveland, although that series, it does not look good. All right, tonight on Locked On Steelers, I want to talk about the fact that David Tepper, the Steelers minority owner, is becoming the owner of the Carolina Panthers. And while that's not really going to affect the Steelers, he does want to bring a Steeler mentality to Carolina. And so I want to take a step back and talk about that Steeler mentality and talk about, I just want to appreciate the franchise, the organization that we cheer for, and how special and unique they are. Because I think we take that for granted too often, especially in an offseason like this where, you know, there's like this pent-up anger because of the way last season ended, and this idea that, you know, this talent is being squandered, and here we are in the last best chance to win a Super Bowl with this team. And I think we sometimes lose sight of the fact that, you know, the Steelers are still the best organization in sports. So do want to talk about that today. Before we do that, let's start today with some Steelers news and notes. Le'Veon Bell tweeting a couple days ago, I'll just quote the tweet here. 9-9-18, I can't wait, # just be patient. Now, 9-9-18, that is the start of the regular season. That is the opener at Cleveland, week 1. Don't know what this tweet means. 9-9-18, can't wait. Maybe if this said, you know, if this said 7-25-18, can't wait. That's the start of training camp, by the way. I'd be a little more excited. Sounds like Le'Veon Bell with this just be patient is, in all likelihood, pointing to the fact that, look, we're not getting a deal done, right? This deal is not getting done. If we're doing the let's read too much into this tweet, it's probably the idea that Le'Veon knows, look, we're too far apart. We're not gonna get this deal done by July. I'm not coming in until week 1. That's when you're gonna see me again. Just be patient, right? I think that's the most likely scenario for the way the Le'Veon situation is gonna play out. There really hasn't been an update in a while. As Kevin Colbert said, they were more focused on the draft. Now they're focused on kind of getting the rookies signed and getting the salary cap situation kind of crystallized and understand where they are from a salary cap perspective. And then they can figure out, okay, if we're going to offer Le'Veon money, you know, how much more money can we offer him? That kind of thing. Look, ultimately, though, we know that Le'Veon Bell is going to have to accept less than he wants. If the average he wants is actually $17 million a year, the Steelers are just not going to offer that. So be patient, because I don't think we're seeing Le'Veon until right before week 1. Steelers.com got an overhaul today. If you're like me and you visit Steelers.com on a almost regular basis or almost daily basis, it got an overhaul. You'll notice it is a completely new design, actually looking a lot more like NFL.com, which I think has a pretty decent web design. So Steelers.com looking, I think they're going to do this. I think the NFL is doing this with all of their sites, just making all of the team sites kind of follow the same design pattern throughout. So check that out. It's a nice design. It makes it easier to get to the videos. And that was really the main event of Steelers.com, is getting watching the interviews with the players, the coaching staff. Mike Tomlin's press conference is on there every Tuesday. Again, Steelers.com getting a pretty nice overhaul, I think. And then finally, the dates and times of the preseason games were announced. So previously, we knew who the Steelers were going to play in what week during preseason, right? We knew it was Eagles, Packers, Titans, Panthers. We didn't know the dates and times. And so that has just been released. Thursday, August 9th, 7 p.m. will be the first time we'll see the Steelers play a preseason game. Again, that'll be at the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Thursday, August 16th, 8 p.m. at the Green Bay Packers. And then the dress rehearsal, the third preseason game, and that'll be the first time we probably see Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and most of the starters will play that game. That'll be Saturday, August 25th at 4 p.m. against the Tennessee Titans. And the final home game will be, or the final preseason game will be Thursday, August 30th at 7 p.m. against the Carolina Panthers. And that is, of course, a tradition. The Steelers and Panthers have ended preseason against one another for as long as I can remember. And that will likely continue as Steelers minority owner David Tepper expected to sign a deal that will make him the owner of the Carolina Panthers for a sweet $2.2 billion with a B, billion dollars. That deal likely to go through as May goes on. I think they have to approve that deal at the owners' meetings before it becomes official, and he would have to sell off his stake in the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. Look, this isn't going to affect the Steelers, right? He may come after some of the members of the Steelers front office to fill out some positions in Carolina, but likely this isn't going to affect the Steelers in any major way, right? The most we've really heard from this minority owner group is that one of them wanted Tomlin fired after the loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's what I want to talk about tonight, is remembering the organization that we cheer for, how special and unique they are. And Adam Schefter tweeted after this report came out that, quote, Panthers owner-to-be David Tepper wants Carolina's football side of the business to mirror the Steelers. Tepper wants continuity, stability, progressive thinking on player contracts, and not setting the market on free agents. He wants the Steeler way in Carolina. Now, Adam Schefter gets to a good point there, which is, you know, this idea that we go right to the Le'Veon Bell deal, right? Which is that the Steelers don't want to go out and reset the market on a lot of these contracts. When it comes to AB's deal, it wasn't outlandish, right? When it comes to Le'Veon's deal, it's why the Steelers and Le'Veon have had such a hard time coming to a number both sides can agree on, because Le'Veon Bell wants to not just reset the market, he wants to go above and beyond resetting the market on running backs, and the Steelers are going to be much more conservative in their approach, as they have always been. You know, you go back and look at how the Steelers have managed the cap. They've been, a lot of people outside of Steelers fans have, they've criticized this team for the way that they've managed the cap in not giving themselves enough room to make major free agent acquisitions. Steeler fans forever, you know, we will forever be the fans who are yelling and screaming about, can we get Revis or, you know, whatever the big free agent of the day at a position of need for the Steelers, we're always going to be the fans that are yelling and screaming. And yet we cheer for an organization that is never going to be that team. Our big free agent acquisitions over the years have been guys like Morgan Burnett, like we had this year, or Mike Mitchell, or Ladarius Green, or, you know, those kind of signings, right? Kimo von Olhoffen back in the day. James Ferrier. Those were very, very successful signings for this team. They weren't sexy, right? We're not making the front page of ESPN.com because the Steelers signed defensive end Kimo von Olhoffen. No one cares, right? But those are the kind of deals this team has struck. And so when we talk about how they've managed the cap, yes, they have not left themselves a ton of cap space, and they have utilized their cap to retain the talent that they've brought in through the draft, right? This team has actually done a very good job, as you look at the last 10, 15 years, of not losing as much talent through free agency or through not being able to extend players as they had in the past, right? You look back in the 90s and you know, Rod Woodson and Kevin Green and, you know, all these players going off and finishing their career in other uniforms, that really hasn't happened to this team all that often recently, right? Emmanuel Sanders, yes, went to Denver, but the Steelers had Antonio Brown they knew they were going to go with. Keenan Lewis went to New Orleans, and that was probably disappointing, although, you know, Keenan Lewis was never a superstar in this league. But, you know, you look at the contracts that this team gave out, they rarely give out extensions to guys who ultimately don't make it, right? You look at the Lamar Woodley contract that they gave out, that ended up being a bad contract because he couldn't stay healthy, right? The Cortez Allen deal, I thought that deal was probably a year early for him, and then he got hurt and never could, you know, never really played on that deal and had to be cut. But other than those two guys, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to really look at players that the Steelers signed to long-term deals that just didn't work out like we thought they would. So this team has done a very good job, as Adam Schefter points out, of keeping, retaining the talent that they have and not being crazy and making the kind of Albert Haynesworth deal that Washington made for $100 million many years back. Or even look at the deal that San Francisco just cut for Jimmy Garoppolo. Yes, I think we all agree Jimmy Garoppolo looked fantastic last year, but for him to be the third highest paid quarterback in the league, the highest paid position in the league after just six games as a starter, right? If that doesn't work out, that sets, you know, if he comes back next season and doesn't look like the same Jimmy Garoppolo that we saw at the end of last season in a lot of garbage football games for that team, you know, you just got to admit that, right? It was the end of the year. Those games didn't matter for San Francisco. If that happens to them, if he is not as good, that sets your organization back. The Steelers don't do those kind of things, and you have to give them credit for that. What you also have to give them credit for is never really panicking. In the moments where it feels like hit the panic button, and 2018 feels like one of those seasons. The end of last year felt like a panic, you know, hand hovering over the panic button, right? But you have to give it to this organization that it takes much, much more than a disappointing loss in January to the Jacksonville Jaguars for this team to hit the panic button. How many times under the Bill Cowher era did this team feel like, boy, they blew it against a team they should not have lost to, right? It felt like that team would overachieve in a lot of ways, and then they would get to that big moment and find a way to underachieve. And that was kind of the story of Bill Cowher. And remember, he went through a major rut. He had very early success in his career. He went to three AFC championship games in the 90s, including a Super Bowl. Then the end of the 90s, the Cordell Stewart era, as it came to an end, very, very unsuccessful. He went through a whole, you know, quarterback controversy type thing. You know, starts Jim Miller and then benches him after like a quarter to put in Mike Tomczak. I mean, you know, Bill Cowher had some real rough, rough times at the end of the 90s. And it culminated in his real clash with general manager at the time, Tom Donahoe. And did the Steelers fire Bill Cowher during that era when they were going through legitimate losing seasons or disappointing seasons? No, they did not. They stuck with him. And then 5 years later, they were rewarded by Bill Cowher winning that Super Bowl in 2005 against the Seattle Seahawks. You look back to the Mike Tomlin era, and Mike Tomlin has had a lot more success, sustained success, than Bill Cowher had throughout the portions of his career because, you know, Mike Tomlin acquired got Ben Roethlisberger to start his career, and so, you know, he's just been kind of riding this out. But that, not to say that Mike Tomlin didn't go through the same kind of rut, the little rut that Bill Cowher went through. I'll go back to the end of 2011. The Steelers lose to Tim Tebow in Denver, an atrocious loss for this team. One of the most embarrassing losses I can remember for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Just an absolutely disgusting way for that season to end. That was a 12-4 team. Yes, they had some injuries at the end of the year, but that was a team that was a year or two removed from being in the Super Bowl. Maybe we didn't have title aspirations, but it's Tim Tebow in the playoffs. We should win this football game. And they lose, and lose in dramatic fashion in overtime. Did that team go out and make major upheaval changes to that team? No. Did they let Bruce Arians go, right? Bruce Arians retires or, you know, was forced into retirement. Whatever happened there, they end up hiring Todd Haley. I thought that was actually a good move at the time. I thought offensively there was some stagnation there. Felt like maybe we can bring in some new blood. And, you know, Ben had gotten a little complacent under Bruce Arians. It was nice to bring in a guy who maybe was going to light a fire under Ben Roethlisberger. So I thought Todd Haley could do that. But you look at the next two seasons after 2011. The Steelers start 2012 6-3. Looks like they're well on their way to compete for a division title. Certainly a playoff berth. Ben gets hurt. They lose the next two games. Then they lose three more to San Diego, Dallas, and Cincinnati, finishing the season losing 5 of 7 and finishing the year 8-8, going from 6-3 to 8-8 at the end of that year, missing the playoffs entirely. Did they go out and have massive overhauls after that season? Now we've had a disappointing season that ended with losing to Tim Tebow and then follow that up with a very disappointing end of the season and finishing 8-8. No, they pretty much stayed the course. 2013, that's the year we started 0-4. So we've just come off of a terrible 8-8 season. Now we're starting the next season 0-4. Now that team in 2013 would come back and finish the year strong, winning 8 of 12 and finishing that season 8-8. But again, now we've had back-to-back seasons of 8-8. You have an offensive coordinator in Todd Haley that hasn't really gotten along with Ben early on in that career. Remember, Ben did the whole you got to talk to Todd thing after Dallas and all of that. But this team did not waver in that decision. They did not waver in the Todd Haley decision. Yes, early on, it did not look good for this team. That did not look like a good decision. Because Bruce Arians went on and had a ton of success in Indianapolis, and we were in struggle town for two seasons, trying to fix this team, trying to put this team back together again. And yet, this organization stuck with it because they rarely make mistakes in these things, right? That is the nice thing about the Steelers, that they rarely make mistakes and they stick to their guns. And they were right to do so because every season thereafter, this team got better and better. Winning the division, playing in a wild card round against Baltimore. Yes, they lost that game. They were pretty decimated by injury. But they continued to improve year over year, making it to the divisional round, then the AFC Championship game. And now here we are after a 13-3 season and a loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we all want to say, major upheaval, major upheaval, major upheaval. That is not the Steelers' way. And I think it is to their credit that it is not the Steelers' way. I tell this anecdote probably too often, but I'll tell it again here on this podcast. The grass is not always greener on the other side of these deals, right? We can sit here and say Mike Tomlin has squandered this talent and he has not lived up. This team has not lived up to its expectations, and this team should have never lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? And there are certainly those amongst us who would like to see major upheaval in the coaching staff at this point. But I will go back to the 2006 San Diego Chargers as a way that this can go all wrong. Other organizations do make massive changes like that, right? Where, you know what? It's not working. Even though you had a successful season, ended too early in the playoffs, you got to go. We're going to change it up, right? And in 2006, that's exactly what happened in San Diego. San Diego was 14-2 in 2006. They were on an extreme run. I mean, they won their last, 8-9 games of that year? Going into the playoffs, they were red hot. That was the height of Phillip Rivers. That was LaDainian Tomlinson at the height of his powers, right? This was an unbelievable year for San Diego, and looked like they were going to be the odds-on favorites to win the Super Bowl. And yet they go out and lose in the divisional round of the playoffs. And Marty Schottenheimer had always had that about him, that, you know, he's just not a team, he's not a guy you can count on to win in the playoffs. Remember, Bill Cowher had that a lot in the 90s. Bill Cowher was always the guy who felt like everything just got a little tighter in the playoffs, and you just can't win with a guy like that. Well, after 2006 and that 14-2 season, they fired Marty Schottenheimer, the San Diego Chargers did. They fired him and they brought in Norv Turner to coach that team going forward. How do you think that team did in 2007? They actually didn't do bad. They went 11-5 that year. They made it all the way to the conference championship game. Lost again to the Patriots in that game. That was one where Phillip Rivers hurt his knee. LaDainian Tomlinson was out. And they had some injury problems in that game. But after that, if you look at the Norv Turner run after that season, it all falls apart. It all falls apart. And that organization has really not recovered since. They have been through multiple coaches since Norv Turner. Right? That team, have they been a dominant, always in the running for their division type of team since then? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That team has gone through multiple coaches, I believe multiple front offices since then. Now, I'm not saying that Marty Schottenheimer would have, if you would have stayed there, you would have had Marty Schottenheimer winning a Super Bowl, right? But what I am saying is stability matters in sports. Stability matters in the NFL. And once they started the train of, we can fire you after 14-2, that just kind of built upon itself to where they are now, which is, again, the San Diego Chargers are just they're just another football team, right? There's nothing special about the San Diego Chargers or the LA Chargers as they are now. There's nothing special. They never went on to do anything special after firing their coach at 14-2. The grass is not always greener. We talk about, we want to fire Mike Tomlin. Who are you bringing in? You bringing in North Turner? You want North Turner to replace him? You think North Turner's going to get you over? Because if he doesn't, the problem is, if he doesn't, the precedent that you've now set is that you are firing your coach whenever. You are just another team in the NFL. Any bad year, any misstep, and you're gone. And that is the same. You know, this team can afford to look a few years down the road because Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert know they're going to be here a few years down the road. So I will criticize the Mason Rudolph thing, and I will criticize it because I feel like this team could have addressed some positions for this season. But I will say it is because this organization is as stable as it is that Mike Tomlin, in a year where he had maybe the most disappointing playoff loss, certainly right up there with the Tim Tebow loss, right? That was Mike Tomlin's 1A or 1B worst playoff loss of his career. And he follows that up by taking the successor to Ben Roethlisberger in the third round when Ben says he wants to play 3 to 5 more years. That's something that only Mike Tomlin and select other coaches in this league can do. No one else would even have the balls to do it because, again, if it blows up, you're gone. Mike Tomlin, on the other hand, is not gone. If Mason Rudolph turns out to be nothing more than an okay backup for his career, that'll be fine in Pittsburgh. Because, again, the boat keeps rowing, the ship keeps going, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to continue to be a successful franchise. And not just that, we are going to continue to be the model franchise for the rest of the NFL. Here's Ravens general manager Eric DaCosta talking about, he's the new general manager taking over for Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore. Here's what he had to say about how the franchise he's trying to put together in Baltimore. Quote, "We've tried to build a sustained culture over a period of time like some of our competitors. We've admired the Steelers. Even though it's probably hard for me to say that, teams like the Steelers who've been able to consistently win, they do it in a certain way. And we've tried to emulate that. And I think we have to a degree, and I'm proud of that." Even to the Baltimore Ravens, this organization is a model franchise. And why is that? Because we don't go crazy on salaries. We don't go crazy on making massive changes. And we have owners that don't meddle. So let's never forget, we can be frustrated, and I'm frustrated, and we're all frustrated by where this team is currently. But let's never lose sight of the organization, the franchise that we cheer for, and really how special and unique they are. Because again, like I talked about the San Diego Chargers, the Pittsburgh Steelers are not just some franchise, right? They are a model by which the rest of the league holds itself as a standard too, right? Other teams aspire to the kind of stability and success that this team has had over many, many years. So never, never forget that, Steeler fans. Even in a time like this where, yes, we've had a tough loss to the Jaguars. Yes, it's been a tough offseason. But we are still, even at this point in the franchise, we are still the model franchise in the National Football League. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com is the email address. You can find me on Twitter @SteelerCountry. And I'll be back tomorrow for more Locked On Steelers.